So we're on Chaf Aleph Amud Bet. We did the Mishnah last time, but we'll start off repeating the Mishnah and then go from there. Two very fascinating sugyot topics that we come across in the Gemara today. Neither of which we'll manage to sort of fully complete, but the first one is what we call Tchilosu b'pshia v'sofa b'ones, which means you start off by being negligent, and then what actually happens is an onus in the end, is totally out of your control. I mean, so for example, it's a bigger topic, but one of the classic examples is, I am given somebody's animal to look after. I'm given somebody's cow, and I don't lock the gate. Right, I don't lock the gate, so I have been posher. Right, I've been negligent. It's very easy for that animal to get out. What actually happens is the cow doesn't get out. It's struck by lightning. Right, so now I have been negligent, but what actually happened to the cow was totally out of my control. So what do you say there? Are you liable or are you not liable? You were negligent, shouldn't have done that. So you lend someone your car, right, and they leave it unlocked. Right, they leave it unlocked. Now, in the end, what happens to the car is something unrelated to. You know, the what would have happened in a sense anyway. What would be your level of liability? So that's one debate which we're going to discuss, and the other one, very big discussion, which is going to take us for a little while. So that's why we'll start it, but we won't finish it. Is about Eish. We talked in the Mishnah, is going to talk about the, which we talked about last time, we'll continue with, is the dog who takes the pita bread or whatever it is, something baking, and it's got a coal on it, and then the coal goes and lights the fire. So that leads us into a discussion of Eish more generally, of this category of fire as a mazik, as a category of damage. Does it come mishum chitzov or mishum mamono? Is it because is it similar? We'll explain these as we go, but basically, is it similar to me shooting an arrow? Is that why you're liable for the fire, in the sense that, you know, I begin a process over here and it continues along, right? It's in the same way that I light a fire and then it goes on its own after that. Or is it mishum mamono? Is it more similar to owning something, owning an animal, right? In the same way that I own an animal and it acts of its own accord, but I'm liable as the owner. So too of the fire. If I start the fire, then again, I'm liable as the quote-unquote owner. So all of that is stuff we'll get into, and we'll have to define it further as we go through it. Okay. Let's just start off with the Mishnah again, so we remind ourselves. Hakelev v'hagadi shekoftu mirosh hagag, a dog or a goat which jump off the roof of the top of a roof. Which is considered to be normal behavior in this case. Presumably that's why it's talking about a dog and a goat, I guess. V'shivru es hakelim, and they broke some utensils, some vessels. Mishalim nezek shalim, they pay full damages, or their own pay full damages. Mnei shehin muadin, because that is considered normal, right? Muad doesn't mean in the Karen sense of the word, but as Rashi says, it's regel, told of the regel who. It's just like normal walking, right? It's a totally expected activity for an animal to do, and therefore the owner who put their animal on the roof, or who led their animal to the roof, or whose animal went up to the roof, I don't think it really makes a difference, is considered to be not watching their animal carefully enough and would be liable for that damage. Hakelev shenotal charora v'holach legodish mishalim, ochal hacharora v'hidlika godish. So he took this, as we said, this wafer or something with coal attached, and he went towards some grain or something growing. Ochal hacharora, he ate it, v'hidlik hagodish, and the coal set everything else on fire. Then al hacharor mishalim nezek shalim. So on the thing that the animal ate, then you pay full damages. That's mishum shein, right? Like eating damages, regular eating damages. But al hagodish mishalim chatzin nezek, that's only considered to be half damages. Again, because it's more indirect, similar to the case of tsroros that we had before. Similar to the case of the animal walking along and accidentally kicks out stones, which again was half damages because of its indirect nature. Okay, timer. So now this is back in the first case of the Mishnah. So let's forget the second part for the moment. We're just talking about the first part. Timer de koftu. The Gemara starts off by inferring and saying the reason why they're liable is because they jumped. Ha-noflu, if they would have fallen, potter, then they would have been, you would have been exempt. Alma kosavar, it shows us that the Mishnah believes, right, in this case, techilaso bepshia v'sofa be'ones is potter, right? So before it starts off being negligent, and then ends up happening with an ones, right? Accidentally or through no fault of their own, then you are exempt. So what's the, again, so I've struggled a little bit to define exactly the negligence and the lack of negligence, you know, the fact that it was totally out of your control. You'll help me if I get stuck, but I think what it means is that the fact that it was on the roof in the first place, right, means that it wasn't being watched properly. It shouldn't have been up there without the appropriate care. But when it actually fell, so obviously the falling was not its fault, right? It was not the animal's fault, it was not your fault, and was not normal, right? And therefore, that's the onus. So those are the two ends, and therefore the Gemara is trying to infer and say that this is a case of tchilos of b'pshia, and again, tchilos of b'pshia v'sof of onos is a general debate. Do we say chayav or do we say potter? And so therefore what the Gemara is trying to do is saying this Mishnah is siding with one opinion over the other, siding with the opinion that says you're exempt. Tanya Namihochi, we have a similar proof from elsewhere. Hakelev v'hagadi, so this is from a brisa, right? This is not, often you have a brisa that's similar to a Mishnah. Similar discussions happened in Tanaitic times, and only one was amalgamated into the Mishnah, or compiled into the Mishnah. Hakelev v'hagadi shekoftzu meirosh hagag, again, dog or a goat which jumped off the roof of the off the top of the roof, v'shavros hakelim, and they broke the utensils, mashalim nezik shalim, you pay full damages. Noflu, says explicitly the brisa, paturin, but if they fell off the roof, then you would be exempt, right? You would be exempt. So fine. So that's the Gemara. Honi chanamanda omara. So this works, and we never like to do this, right? As a Gemara, it doesn't love to. We don't. We try to make. We don't tend not to. This is a little bit beyond the scope. But my sense from the Gemara is that the Gemara tries to make the Mishnah apply to as many opinions as possible rather than fewer opinions. So we only sort of say it's one opinion over the other if we sort of feel like we're backed into a corner to say that. So the Gemara is probably going to try and. That's I think what the Gemara tries to do now. Honi chalamand omer. So the Mishnah makes sense according to the person who says techilos b'pshia v'sofa b'onis potter. So that's what they say. Elalamand omer chayav ma'ikal amemar. How would you explain our Mishnah and potentially even the Brisa according to that opinion? Right? Maybe you still have to try and fit it in. Try and fit it into that opinion. We would like to. So the Gemara answers. So it's an unusual answer. Let's say you have the roof over here, on the roof like this, but again, there's like a drop next to the roof. The utensils are right at the bottom. They're sort of up against the wall underneath this roof. So this is what the Gemara is saying. If it would have jumped, it wouldn't have landed on the utensils, because the utensils are directly underneath, and it would have cleared them, it would have gone over them. It's only because it fell, right? Therefore, it wouldn't have been damaged at all, and therefore afilu tchilos b'pshia laka. Then it's not even considered the tchilos b'pshia, because again, the fact they were on the roof is fine, but again, nothing would have happened unless they would have fallen. It's not even a tchilos b'pshia. It's not like you started off being negligent. There's no connection between the fact that it was on the roof. In a sense, the point is that it wasn't guaranteed to happen, right? When it went up to the roof, if it would have jumped, if it would have continued as normal, then you would have been fine. But the fact that it ended up falling, that was the only reason. There's no connection between the falling and the or rather, there's no connection between being on the roof and the utensils being broken. Okay. So that's how the Gemara explains those two opinions. I think, yeah, go on.
By virtue of the fact, dog wouldn't go up the roof.
And shouldn't be.
Jumped or fall,
yeah. So this is what I struggle with. I I've struggled to articulate it. It sort of fits in my mind, but I struggle to articulate it. So let's just try. I think you're making a good point in the sense that, right, if it's up there anyway, it's up there anyway. So you should call that starting with negligence. So what I think it means, when we talk about tchilos of a pshia of a sofer b'onos, maybe my example actually of the leaving the car open is not a good one. Because again, there has to be some sort of connection between the tchilos of a pshia of a sofer b'onos, right? So it's almost like, let's come back to the looking after the cow example, right? If I leave the gate open and it never leaves, right, and then gets struck by lightning, then that's not even tchilos of a pshia, right? That's just full on onus. It's totally out of the ordinary. But let's say it walks out the gate and then gets struck by lightning, right? So that's, I think, what we mean when we say tchilos of a pshia of a sofer b'onos. So here, sounds like the point is, when it goes onto the roof, if there's a possibility that its normal behavior would lead to the utensils being broken, then that's called pshia, right? And that's called thing. Over here, the normal behavior wouldn't lead to that, right? When it goes onto the roof, there's nothing. There's no problem with leading animals to the roof if there's nothing they're going to break, right? I.e., the expectation is that they'll, well, you know, jump off, and that would be fine, and then it will continue on its merry way. It just so happens that because it fell off the roof, then that's why.
And that's in the case, for example, in Switzerland, where often you see animals grazing on roofs or chalets, that would be normal, that I'd understand, but if maybe it was a built up area where there was commerce going on, I find it a bit harder to believe.
You mean not all roofs would? Yeah. Okay. So I think already the Rishonim talk about where do you draw the line? Where do you draw the line? I mean, in addition to the fact, yeah, it's partly about being on the roof, but it's also about where do you draw the line of it being normal to jump? I mean, if it's a three-story building, right? It's not normal for any animal to jump off that. So I think, to be honest, I think they leave it a little bit vague in the sense that you can't define every single... what are you going to come up with, a height definition? You know, I don't know if things change. But yeah, I think... But the sense you do get... I think it was a... where did I see it? Yeah, I think you do get the sense that everybody would agree that if it's particularly unusual, then that would be... that would be different. But again, unusual makes it worse. Well, not worse, but unusual means you're going to be less liable in a sense, you know, because the animal wouldn't have been, it would be less expected. Less expected. Okay. The truth is, tchilos b'pshia v'sof b'onos, this whole... You know, this sort of category is quite an interesting big discussion, but this is not really the main place where it is discussed. So everybody sort of moves on from here and talks about the next element, which is Aish, which is fire damage. But it is an interesting discussion in and of itself. I'm wondering if there were a couple of... Yeah, okay. Okay, all right, let's keep going. So either way, the point is that our Mishnah can be explained by either, right? It can be explained by either opinion. Right, but either opinion. So again, the tchilos b'pshia v'sof b'onos chayev, the one who says that if those sorts of cases you would be liable, has to explain our Mishnah, which is with a slightly unusual, just a slightly narrower case, i.e., talking about a case where the utensils were very close to the roof, and therefore the animal would have cleared them if it would have jumped. Right, it was only through falling that it was a problem, and therefore the jumping off the roof the falling off the roof is not considered to be negligent.
Yeah,
right.
It's an accident.
Exactly. Falling off the roof is not considered to be negligent.
Starts off as negligence because you let them go on the roof.
But it doesn't start, but that's not considered to be starting off as negligent.
It starts off as negligence because you shouldn't let them on the roof. But it ends in an accident.
But again, that's according to that's the one who says it's exempt, but according to the one who says you're liable, you would be liable in general case of starting off as negligent and ending in an accident, we have to re-explain these cases to say that the utensils are close by to the roof, and therefore if it would have continued as normal, nothing would have happened, and therefore it's not even called starting off as negligent, because again, it would have, you know, in the normal course of things, nothing would have happened. It's only because of the falling that anything happened.
But the storekeeper was neighbour as we were previously to put his vessels or whatever outside in a great drop zone, let's put it that way. In other words, it's not having a cut where it's not to one side of the wall. If he was entitled to display his goods where they were, then it would be foreseeable that anything that fell on it would cause damage.
Yeah, that's true, but that doesn't mean there's going to be a liability. They're two different things. Meaning, you feel bad for the owner's done nothing wrong. I agree with you. The owner of the utensils has lost out when you're exempt, but that doesn't mean. Again, what if it would have been an ownerless animal? Let's say it would have been a wild animal that did it, right? What could he do? Right, so
all there was the restraining wires.
Yes, I think it's always hard to read these things with a 21st century, living in a 21st century world, because we live in a world where the expectation has become that there's barriers everywhere, and everyone has insurance, and why didn't this person have this, that, you know, and you sort of there is that level of expectation nowadays. But so again, if that is considered a societal expectation, then you'd be right. But this is talking about in a normal course of of the world, where these things did used to happen. You know, these things, and well, they still happen. But not everyone's going to be liable. There's many cases. excuse me. There's many cases where it's just going to end up. You know, accidents happen and you lose out. So again, we need to look at it from two perspectives. You're right in terms of the owner of the utensils, they've lost their thing, and that's difficult for them, but that doesn't automatically mean there's liability for somebody, right? I think it's also good. I mean, just that principle is a good thing to bear in mind anyway. You know, I sort of feel like we live a lot in a society which is always looking for someone to blame. If something happens wrong, you need to have, yeah, correct. There needs to be someone who was liable as a result, right? So that's not always true. You know, sometimes things did happen. There might be lessons to learn, right? Doesn't mean you can't learn lessons from it. Doesn't always mean that there's someone to blame and there's someone to liable, for this sort of thing. So anyway, okay. Omer of Zvid. Okay, so I think we're now, as Omer of Zvid is about 7-8 lines from the end of the page. Omer of Zvid, Mishmei de Rava. So he says in the name of Rava as follows. Pa'omim, sometimes, sha'afilu noflu. Even if it were to fall, nami chayev. Right? I actually forgot this. Okay, so this is, similar to what Andy's saying. Right? Sha'afilu noflu. Even if it fell off the roof, nami chayev, it'd still be liable. Why? Mashgachas lo b'kosel ro'ua. If you let your animal go up on a roof, where it would be expected that the animal would simply jump off the roof and go and land safely away from utensils, then you're allowed. Then that's fine. There's no problem. But let's say you let your animal go onto a shaky roof, right? Where it's expected that it's going to, you know, it's not out of the realm of possibility that it's going to fall. You put it on, and the roof is all, or the wall. It's really a kosel ro'ua, or is a shaky wall, right? It's not stable. This bit's going to fall off, and then it falls. So that was predictable, right? So that's not onus. Right, that's part of you've got to look out for that, right? You can't let your animal go onto a shaky roof where it's likely to fall, or it's at least, you know, significant possibility that it's going to fall. So my nihu, what? So the Gemara actually challenges this a little bit. It says, my new, where exactly is the liability over here? Or where's the negligence over here? De'i boile la'asuke daita de'nofil orche. Right? You should have recognized, the owner should have recognized, that it was normal, it was expected, there was a certain level of expectation. Right? When I say expected, I don't mean it's 90% likely, but again, this, you know, it's not out of the realm of possibility, something that should have been foreseen, that this animal would fall, and therefore falling obviously is going to break the utensils. Sosof, lo nofal, orche, v'nofal niu. Excuse me, I don't know what's going on with my voice today. But the bottom line is, right, that the bricks didn't fall. So again, the Gemara is saying that you should have expected that something would fall. So it says, but in the end, lo nofal orche, right, it's not the bricks that fell, it's the animal that fell, right? So that would be considered to be negligent. Sorry, you start off as negligent, and then it's an onus in the end. I.e., you'd have expected some. Let's say it's a roof with, you know, like a tiled roof, and the tiles are a bit thick. So you'd expect the tiles to slip off, right? But the tiles slipping off might not do the damage that the animal falling off is what happened, right? In a sense, it sounds like you might not have been. Again, I guess you could say it would be, you know, you just come up with the case where the animal is expected to fall off, and that's really what the Gemara does. But point is over here that a shaky wall might loose bricks. It might loose some of the bricks, but it wouldn't necessarily be expected that the animal would fall off. So therefore, the Gemara responds and says, no, we're talking about a case where the animal would be expected to fall off. Lo tzricha bekosel tzar. Doesn't necessarily mean it's a shaky wall, it means it's a thin wall, very, very narrow wall, and therefore, likely that the animal is going to fall off, and therefore that should have been foreseen or should have been expected to an extent by the owner, and therefore it's going to be liable even if the animal fell, right? General principle is if the animal jumps, then you're going to be liable. If the animal falls, then not liable, at least according to Tchilas B'Mshir V'Sof B'Onos Potter. If the utensils are very close to the wall, everybody agrees that the animal falling would be exempt. But if it's a narrow wall, then it sounds like everybody would agree that the animal falling, you'd be liable, right? So we sort of have three different cases over here. If the utensil, this is helpful. I've not said it in these terms before, but I guess to sum up, it sounds like we've got three cases which show the difference. The difference in liability. Okay, so at the two extremes, we have animal climbs up on the roof, the utensils are a certain distance away from the roof, right? There, that's the hardest one to start with. That's not one of the extremes. Okay, simple extreme is if it's a narrow wall. Okay, animal climbs up onto a narrow wall, right? Whether it falls or it jumps, everybody seems to agree that you're liable, right? Everybody agrees that you're liable. Fine. Very good. Other extreme, you have the animal. Yeah.
Close to the wall and the animal falls.
And the animal falls, but also everybody agrees that you're liable, right?
I think there was an opinion where they got it.
Not if it's close. If it's close to the wall, we said you are liable.
No.
What were we doing at the end?
You're not liable.
Why?
Because if you'd have jumped, you wouldn't have jumped onto the vessel. But the vessel,
sorry, everybody agrees. Oh, right. So that was the one. Sorry.
Yeah, okay, fine. If it's close to the wall and you fall, you're not liable.
If
the vessel's close to the wall.
And everybody agrees that you wouldn't be liable.
Yeah.
Correct. Okay, so very good. Thank you. Yeah. So if the utensils are close to the wall, everybody agrees you wouldn't be liable. So again, you have the one case, the narrow wall, everybody agrees you would be liable. The vessel's close to the wall, everybody agrees you wouldn't be liable. Then you have the in-between case, where it climbs onto a regular roof, and the utensils are a certain distance away. According to the opinion, right, who says you're liable when you start with negligence, doesn't matter what happens after that. So then whether it jumps or it falls, you'd be liable. Whereas according to the opinion, who says that you'd be exempt, where you start with negligence, if it ends up being accidental, then if you jumped, you'd be liable. But if it fell, then you wouldn't be liable. So that's the sort of debate case in the middle. Okay, very helpful. All right, so that's what we figured out from this Mishnah and Gemara. Okay, great. And now we move on. Right, now we move on to the next part. That's really the first half of the Mishnah. Now is the second half of the Mishnah. We move on to the dog carrying the colt. Tana Rabbanan. Sages taught as follows. Hakelev v'hagadi shadilgu. Oh no, sorry, we're not moving on yet. My mistake. Because I see that every time I see the kelev, I think we're moving on. Yeah, we're still dealing with jumping. You're jumping in the other direction now. Okay, jumping in the other. I haven't said. Jumping in the other direction. Mimato lamala. So now you're not going down, not jumping down, but you're jumping up. Paturin, the Gemara says. Okay, you're exempt. Why are you exempt? Milamala, so presumably, right? I don't think the Gemara is even going to spell it out. Presumably, the reason would be that's considered to be unusual, right? Now, when I think of jumping upwards, I always think of a cat, right? Cat always looks like it's they always seem to jump onto a wall, but I guess for other animals, it's unusual to jump up to the roof. It's normal to jump down from the roof, but unusual to jump up to the roof. So therefore, if I jump up to the roof and broke utensils, that would be paturin, that wouldn't be considered to be regel. That's, considered to be different. Now, interesting discussion, actually, unless I'm mistaken. Let's just finish these two lines of the Gemara. So if it jumped upwards, it's exempt. Milamala lamata. But if it jumped downwards, then chayovim, it would be, you'd be liable full damages. Now, interestingly, so Rashi says milamata lamala paturin. He says minezek shalem. You're exempt from full damages, but v'chay b'chatzi nezek dimishunhu. He says you still pay half damages. So Rashi says when it says exempt, doesn't really mean fully exempt. You're still paying half damages. It's just considered to be unusual. I have a feeling that others disagree with this Rashi. Let me just see. Yeah, okay, so Tosus and Odom over here. There you go. So Tosus says, oh no, that's a different one. Oh no, yeah, it is over here. Yeah, so this Tosus, the Tosus on the bottom, don't see inside, but the Tosus on the bottom disagrees, right, and says that you're totally exempt. He says it's so unusual for an animal to do that you're totally exempt. And the Tosus uses this to answer something which we're going to come across in just a little bit, actually. So. Just an interesting side point, really, to note. The fact that when the Gemara, and this is generally a something we have seen in the past, that at times the Gemara will use the word potter to mean fully exempt, other times it means exempt from full damages, but actually half damages, you're still going to be liable. So over here we have the debate. The Gemara's left it a bit unclear, and Rashi says you'll still be liable half damages, whereas Tosa says you would be... you'd be totally exempt altogether, right? It's such an unusual thing. Okay, Adam v'Tarnagel shadilgu milamala. Shadilgu, right? Bein milamala lamato, bein milamato lamala chayovim. So we're comparing. We talked about a kelev and a gedi, a dog and a goat which jumped upward. That's unusual, but an animal and a person. And a tarnagol and a chicken, shadilgu, that they jumped upwards, then that would be considered to be normal, right? Why? What's the difference? So the difference is that would be well. So it's interesting over here. Presumably they've got slightly different reasons, right? In fact, Rashi says this. So Rashi, this last Rashi on the page says, Adam v'tarnagol, Adam inami lav urche. Even if it's not normal, likfot milamata lamala, to jump from the bottom up to the top, right? Even if it's not normal for a person to jump from down low onto a roof, then you'd still be chayev. You'd still be liable. Why? De'ein be'adam tzad tomus ele be'behemo. When we talk about a tam and we talk about you know, things being unexpected, that's usually in the realm of animals, where there's already, you know, the liability of a person for the animals is going to be one step removed. When you're talking about your liability for your own self doing things, then we have a much higher bar. And therefore, he says there's no such, you know, no such exemption, basically. The reason that the person is liable is regardless of whether it's normal or not. Maybe it's totally unusual to jump from down below to up high, but still, you shouldn't have done it. So the fact that you broke the utensils, so then so you're liable for your own body, for what you've done yourself. But with the Tarnagol's got a different reason. They both happen to be fully liable, but the reason for the Tarnagol is the Darko L'daleg Afilu Milamata L'mala, because it's normal for a chicken to flap its wings and to go to jump upwards, right? And again, and I keep coming back to these cats, I don't know why, but presumably that the same would be true for a cat, right? That again, it's normal to jump upwards. You see them jump onto these high walls, very common. So that would be considered normal, and therefore if they were to break utensils as they did that, then that would be the owner presumably would be liable for that as well. So what we're doing over here is a distinguishing, recognizing that different animals will have different liabilities. And again, human beings have their own level, although it's been lumped in. The Gemara sort of links them together. That's just in terms of the bottom line. But the reasoning behind the liability for a human, the liability for a tarnagol, for the chicken, is obviously different. Okay, Vehatanya, turning over. Or not turning over, right? Sorry, looking across to the other side. Depends on what Gemara you're using. But Chof Bet Amud Aleph now. For Hatanya, haven't we taught in a Braisa? We have the Braisa says the following thing. Hakelev v'hagadi shedilgu bein milamala lamata bein milamata lamala. So whether it's from below to above or above to below, either way round, paturin, you're going to be exempt. What do you mean you're going to be exempt? This is against our... Well, interesting, whether, yeah, so it's interesting that the Gemara is asking this over here, actually. The Gemara brings this Braisa to contradict what we just taught in a separate Braisa, right? It already disagrees with our Mishnah as well. I mean, we'd already said you're liable in the Mishnah. Okay, so either way, it clearly seems to be contradicting both. Why it waited until here is an interesting... Oh, Tosus asks us on the top. Very short. Tosus, right at the top, says, yeah, you could have asked this on the Mishnah. And he says, okay, but it waited until now, basically to explain both together, because we were bringing the Braisa anyway. So the Gemara waited to bring it. Okay, either way. Tirgama. So let's explain as follows. Tirgama of Papa. Of Papa explained the Braisa as follows. De'apich meipach. De'apich meipach, because they did it in a I think it means they did it in a strange way, right? If they would have jumped in the normal way, here's what it means. So next few words, de'apich meipach, they jumped in an unusual way. What does that mean? Kalba bizakira v'gadya bisricha. So I guess there is a dog-like way of jumping, and there's a goat-like way of jumping. And what happened over here was that the dog jumped like a goat, and the goat jumped like a dog. And the fact that they jumped in their strange way, or in an unusual way, is what led to the exemption. Because again, it was unexpected. It's a strange thing for the animal to do, and therefore the fact that it was so unexpected again leads to this exemption. Exemption, presumably. Same question between Rashi and Tosis, I'm guessing, as to whether you're paying half damages or no damages, I'm guessing. But either way, okay. Rashi says Bizakira means regular jumping, an animal. The gdi rather, a goat jumps normally, just sort of leaps one from the other. But with the dog, shenoit tzipornov bekosel, that it digs its nails, its claws into their wall. Is that what it is? I don't know. I can't really picture it. I mean, jumping is yeah. I can't see the a massive difference in the jumping, but I mean, meaning I understand in the setup, you know, your I don't know. Is that what? Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Does anyone jump with 4 feet? Oh, I guess. Do they? Maybe. I don't know.
But we send this transmitter.
Oh, you're right. Okay, so yeah, you got ahead of me. Okay, so ihochi, if so, amai pturim, why are they exempt? Potrim in nezek, shonim v'chayim v'chazi nezek. Thank you very much. Yeah, okay, well pointed out. So why are they exempt? So it says, no, they're not fully exempt. It means potrim in nezek, shonim v'chayim v'chazi nezek. They are exempt only from full damages, but they're still liable half damages. Yeah, it's exactly. Exactly.
That seems to be a principle.
What the fact that
if the damage is caused by
unusual manner,
moving in an unexpected way,
yeah,
you're not exempt, but there's a reduction.
So I think that's true. I think that is true, but if it's totally unusual, then it might be in a correct, right? Then it might be in a different category. So again, how different is different? You know, you have a similar thing when it comes to the laws of Shabbat. Actually, you know, there's the concept of shinui, right? When you do something in an unusual way. So there are some times where you can do something in an unusual. There are almost three categories. There's sometimes where you do something in an unusual way, but it's not unusual enough to really make a significant difference, right? So turning a light on with your left hand as opposed to your right hand. Okay, so I usually use my right hand, but I use my left hand and stuff. That's not that is a difference, but it's not. That's not a significant difference. You'd still be liable from the Torah, right? You'd still be liable from the Torah. Let's say you did it with a fork, right? Or maybe fork might also be. I don't know. Depends how difficult it is. I would say if it's unusual, if you do it with your nose, let's say for example, right? That would be unusual. Yeah.
And there was some electrical.
Yeah, so what
the tech to go out. One of the guys behind him was an electrician. What did he do? He did it with his left hand. He was right-handed. He pulled out with his left hand.
But you're assuming that. Yeah, you're talking about when he actually fixed it there.
He needed to fix it because there was a fire alarm.
So
he did it with his left hand.
Fine. So I don't know how. Assuming that would be very difficult. That would fall into. That would be assuming it was difficult. That would be a shinui, but that would be a shinui that lowers it to the level of derabonan, right? That lowers it to the level of being rabbinically prohibited. So again, if you combine that maybe with other factors, yeah, maybe that would work. But that wouldn't be enough of a shinui to make. But you can do something in such an unusual way that it's just not considered to be the same action altogether. So. I'm not sure if this is a great example. Yeah, okay, that's also a different thing. Whether that's a separate one. Picking up a child. I mean, with lights, it's a much more. In some ways, it's a simpler problem. In some ways, it's more complicated to get into the details of. But I'll give you another example. You know, in terms of classic example. You know, destroying letters, right? Destroying letters. You're not supposed to erase things, right? So everybody agrees that, for example. If you have biscuits or a piece of cake, you know, with writing on it, that if you eat it, that's fine, right? So the truth is, with derech achila might be its own exemption, but the other way you could explain it is it's not just called a regular shino, it's so totally different. No one calls that erasing, you know, in any sort of way, that it's not just rabbinically prohibited, it's just it's totally permitted, right? It's so different. That it's totally permitted. So again, I feel like we sort of see a similar thing over here, that sometimes it's a little bit different, sometimes it's significantly different, and sometimes it's so different that it's just I wasn't talking about Hashem's name. I was talking about erasing letters on Shabbat, because you're not supposed to erase. Where you've got Hashem's name printed on a biscuit might be a little bit different, because there the prohibition. That's a good point. Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't know who would do. When you say that, people do. People write. Okay. In theory, people might write. Yeah, people might write things. Or the truth is, the same thing in theory. It's not quite the same level, but you're also not supposed to erase an entire pasuk. So you could have somebody who writes an entire verse, for example, you know, on on a cake or something. People get, I mean, generally disposing of or, destroying verses is one of these things which actually is more problematic than we think it is. We're very strict with Seamus. I'm hopefully going to write about this, because Seamus is one of these things, you know, what to throw away or not to throw away. So a lot of the time we're throwing away tons of stuff we don't need to be, or not throwing it away, we're burying it rather than, you know, recycling or something like that. But actually, a lot of the time, people are putting verses on things without realizing. So a classic one is wedding invitations. Wedding invitations, a lot of the time, people write a verse, you know, on the top of the wedding invitation, and then the wedding invitation just gets thrown away. So probably should avoid, it's good to avoid that. I remember going to a protest, I don't remember what it was. It was something in the name of Israel. It was many years ago. And someone pointed, and they made these, they called them thunder sticks. You know, these things you like bang them together. So someone pointed out that they're very sweetly written, you know, like a verse sort of about Israel on the thing, and you're standing there banging together these things, and they all get thrown away in the bin afterwards. So that's also not the best thing to do. So yeah, verses and destruction of that sort of thing is another interesting topic on its own. Anyway, back to this. Not all differences are created equal. Let's say that. This is our new phrase that we'll coin for today. Not all differences are created equal, meaning some of them are different enough that they'll be considered to be chatzi nezek, right? It's called meshune, that it will now be, you'll be liable half damages. But sometimes it's so significantly different, like Tosus was saying, right, on the page before. I think that's what Tosus was saying when he was talking about the animal. Where was that? Tosis? There was Tosis talking about the animal jumping from jumping onto the roof, right? And he was saying that for a goat to jump upwards onto the roof is so unusual that you'd be totally exempt, right? That was what the debate between Tosis, Rashi and Tosis was. Okay, so over there that was so unusual that you'd be totally exempt. Whereas over here, it's unusual enough that you pay half damages, but not full damages. Okay, and now we'll move it finally after I told everyone we're doing it a few times, but now we are actually moving on to the part where the dog pulls out the coal and drags it along with him and lights a fire as a result. Okay, so this is, as I said, a big piece of Gemara, which we're definitely not going to finish today, but let's get started on it. Hakelef Shenotal. Right, okay, so that's what our mission said. Hakelef Shenotal, again, and remind ourselves, the dog took the bread, the coal was attached. When it ate the bread, it was liable full damages, okay, for the eating the bread. But the fire that ensued, the owner is only liable half damages. Itmar, Rabbi Yochanan Omar, Rabbi Yochanan says, Isho Mishum Chitzov, Veresh Lokish Omar, Isho Mishum Mamono. If you underline anything in your Gemara, this is worth underlining, okay? This is the key debate between Rabbi Yochanan and one of the key debates between Rabbi Yochanan and Veresh Lokish. You are liable for, and this is not just talking about a dog, this is talking about even you, yourself, right? And a person lights a fire, and the fire ends up causing damage elsewhere, then Mishum Chitzov, you are liable as though you had fired a bow, right? You fire an arrow, rather. You shot the arrow. I'm over here. The arrow did damage over there, right? What do you mean? I just simply shot it in the air, right? And when it came down, 100 feet away, then that's where it did damage. That wasn't my fault. Answer is, of course, it was your fault. You shot the boat, right? You set it off on that trajectory. So too, when you light the fire, that's the source, as it were, or that's the model that is causing the liability. Or it's mashum momono, similar to owning an animal or owning a pit, right? And then making it hefka. Right, you have something which belonged to you or that you started off, and therefore you're going to be liable for it in a sense more similar to the model of being being liable because of the damage done by your property, that you didn't look after your property properly, right? You didn't look after what you had sufficiently. Reish Lakish, my time alomer Rabbi Yochanan. Why does Reish Lakish disagree? Why does he not follow the view of Rabbi Yochanan? I what's the why do they explain Eish in these different ways. Omar lecha chitzov mikocho ka'ozli. When you fire a bow, you are firing it in a direction, and it is your force that is causing it to go where it ends up, right? Hi, love mikocho ozil. This is not traveling because of your force, right? You didn't do anything to set it off in a certain direction. I lit the fire over here, and fire spreads on its own, right? It might spread miles and miles and miles before it does damage. I have fields which go for, however long, for 10 miles my fields go, and I'm burning my crops for whatever reason, and then it happens to be in 10 miles time, you know, because of the wind or for whatever, you know, something else, there's something else that goes on, then that's so that's why he's uncomfortable explaining it like an arrow, because an arrow is much more direct. He's saying this is much more indirect. I mean, I keep using the word direct and indirect, maybe overusing them. He says, Mishum kocho, right? One is because of your force, the other one is not considered to be your force. For Rabbi Yochanan, my time, why did Rabbi Yochanan not explain the Mishnah, explain Eish in this way? Omar Lecha, he says as follows, Momona isbe mamosha, ha lesbe mamosha. When we're talking about property, something that's something you can guard over, an animal, you can guard over your pit that you have there. But Holeis Be Mamosha, over this, there's nothing there, the fire is not doesn't have physical properties in quite the same way, and therefore that's why he was uncomfortable explaining it in that way, and he said it's Mishum Chitzov, it's more similar to an arrow that you're shooting at. Okay, so that's the initial reasoning behind Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish, and we're going to go through a number of different look at a number of different cases and try and figure out whether there are differences between the two, whether one of them seems to, you know, whether we seem to side with one over the other. All of that is going to be dealt with in the Gemara. Hakelev shenotol charor. Tanan, excuse me. Our Mishnah said, Hakelev shenotol charor. So our Mishnah is going to be one of the key starting points. Again, just to remind ourselves, when we're talking about this machlokas between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, we're dealing with Eish across the board, any fire. If I light a fire, the case in our Mishnah was where the animal did it, you know, indirectly. So that's already a few steps removed. So we're now bringing a proof from our Mishnah to try and feed that back in to this debate, to this general debate between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish about fire always. So let's go back to our Mishnah. Tanan, Hakelev Shenotol Charor, took this food, etc. And we all know what happened. Bishlam Olamanda Omar Isha Mishum Chitzov. I understand why this works, why this case works, because of Chitzov Dekelevhu, right? That, the way Rabbi Yochanan would explain our Mishnah is very simple. Excuse me. Because Eish is all right, fire, you're always liable as though it were an arrow. So over here, this was, as it were, the arrow of the animal, right? And therefore that's indirect, and therefore that's why you're only going to be liable half damages, right? It's as though the animal shot an arrow, as it were, right? And therefore that's why it's less direct. Ela lamanda omer ishim mishum mamona. If you explain as Reish Lakish does that fire, you're always liable because it's part of your property, then hi eish lav mamona de baal kelevu, right? Wouldn't this fire consider it just like the animal is your property, so too the fire would be your property. So you'd expect not to be liable half damages, you'd expect to be liable full damages, right? If it's just about property and not guarding. So I want to call Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish responds as follows. Yeah. One more time?
This idea that the dog is equivalent, so his moving fire from one place to another place is equivalent of someone firing an arrow. That doesn't hold, because a human being has to physically notch an arrow, spend trajectory far the arrow. That's something they're doing physically. The dog clearly can't do that. So why is a parable saying that the dog moving a fire from A to B is like an individual firing an arrow from A to B?
No, so again, the point is fire, any fire damage, right, according to Rabbi Yochanan, is... the question is, why are you liable? When you light a fire, the reason we have this totally separate category of damages is because it's difficult to define what the liability is. Usually when I cause damage, right, so I come along and I, you know, break something. So you can tell I broke that and finished. I lit the fire over here. It might not burn. At what point do you? It might set fire to something tomorrow, right? I turned on my stove, right? I turned on my stove. I left the house. I forgot. Hours later, right? My stove sets the whatever it is, something else on fire. It sets this on fire. Da 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 da. Ends up burning my neighbor's fence down. You know, thank God everybody's fine. Very lucky, but it just burns down the fence. So now, who says I'm liable? Right? Who says I'm liable? So again, 21st century, like we said, you know, we have a lot of expectation that people have set safety parameters into place. But thinking back, what the Torah is saying is that yes, you would be considered liable. So now the debate between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish is why is that so, or what is the? It's not why we're happy. It's the what is the mechanism, as it were, that. That enables us to do it. So what Rabbi Yochanan is saying is that the reason why any fire damage is liable is when you light a fire, be aware that it's as though you are firing an arrow. And the same way that you would be liable firing that arrow, that it might hit something, you know, if you're strong enough, you shoot it and it just keeps going for hours, you know, you shoot it up high and then it just keeps going and, you know, with incredible strength, eventually it will hit something and you're going to be liable for that because it came from your power, your koach. So too, the fire also came from your koach. It's not exactly from your koach, but that's the imagery that Rabbi Yochanan is describing for us. Yes, correct. As though you fire an arrow. So that's what we're saying over here. So if that's the mechanism, if that's the sort of the imagery that Rabbi Yochanan is conjuring up for us, so then we need to apply that into this case. So you're right, a dog clearly can't fire a bow. But let's imagine they did, right? So let's imagine the dog fired a bow. So would you be liable? So the answer is probably not. You'd be half damages. Why? Because you own the dog, but it's a strange thing for a dog to do. It's clearly less direct, and the dog has now done this action, and therefore I understand why you're liable half damages. That's what the mission is saying. But according to Rabbi Yochanan doesn't explain that way. He says the reason why you're generally liable for fire is not because of the mechanism of an arrow, but is because it's considered to be linked back to you in terms of property or in terms of the expectation that you look after it. When you light a fire, it's as though you have bought a cow, right? And just like you are expected to watch over that, what that cow does, you are expected to watch over what the fire does afterwards. And therefore, the Gemara is saying that if the dog is your property, then the fire should also be considered your property, according to Reish Lakish, and therefore you should be liable full damages. It should be considered to be something which you are expected to do. So Reish Lakish responds and says as follows: Omalecha Reish Lakish, hocha b'mayaskinan da'adye aduye. Right. So he says, no, it's not where. According to Reish Lakish, you have to. Maybe that would be the case. And what you have to explain is as follows: that it wasn't just the. it wasn't just that the dog took it elsewhere, but the dog actually threw it there. I think da'adye aduye. Da'al charon mshalim nezek sholem va'al mokom gacheles mshalim chatzin nezek. But on the place where it landed, you are liable half damages, right? Va'al godish kula potter. So what he's saying is as follows: it's like the animal threw it, and therefore that in and of itself is unusual. And even more than that, the resulting fire that happened from the coal, you'd be totally exempt for. It's only that initial burning that could be linked back to the dog.
Is it or the. Or
Correct, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Because it's now, yeah. So again, it's very unusual, this approach of Reish Lakish, right? But again, following that logic track. You mean the fellow who had a coal? Why? Oh, because it's his property. So we're going to have to define. You're right. So at what point do you what point does it end? There's a very, very famous Nemuka Yosef. So the Nemuka Yosef is, we always look at the Gemara. We have the Gemara here, we have Rashi on one side, we have Tosis on the other side. But one of the other famous Rishonim is called the Rif. So the Rif writes, when you look at the Rif, it looks like a page of Gemara. It's the way we set it out. It's often in the back of a Gemara, and you'll see the Rif has his commentary is very interesting, because he mostly just sort of takes out bits of the Gemara and sort of puts pieces in different places. He doesn't write a commentary in the traditional way. He sort of just adjusts the Gemara to make clear how he understands it. And anyway, the Nemuka Yosef is a commentary on the Rif, and possibly the most famous Nemuka Yosef in all of Shas is on this discussion. Hopefully, I'll try and photocopy it maybe for next time we look at it, where he asks the following question. You're not allowed to light a fire. Well, this is really, it's not quite the Karaite question. The Karaite question is a little bit different. He says, if you follow the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan, right, according to Rabbi Yochanan, when you light Shabbat candles, right, that means that you've fired the arrow, which means that you're, in a sense, you're liable for any burning that ensues after that. So when Shabbat begins, you're, in a sense, you're liable for that burning. So how are you allowed to light Shabbat candles? Surely you have to blow them out before Shabbat begins, because now it's considered like you are, yes, exactly, right, you're continually, your fire is continually consuming as a result of your initial lighting, and therefore why are you allowed? So clearly he has an answer for that, but very fascinating how he deals with that as a result. Anyway, so yeah, it's a big topic. Okay, so is this a good place to stop? This Reish Lakish. Well, we did the Toshma, right? No, where's the Toshma? Oh, yeah, to stop at the Toshma. Okay, good idea. All right, so for Rabbi Yochanan, da'ancha anuche, right? Rabbi Yochanan says, no, it's not that he has to throw it, just means he lay it down, right? The coal simply, fell off, or you put it down as he was eating. Al-charorav, al-mokam ha-gacheles, mishanam nezek shalom. So he says, not only are you liable for the... for the food that the dog ate, but on the initial place where the dog put the coal down, that place you're liable full damages, right? That little area of thing, because that is direct. But then when the fire then spread from there, for ala godish, mishanam chatzin ezek, the spreading out from there, that's the half damages, so that's the indirect. For a sack.
Where the coal
went. Assuming it was a sack. Why would it be a sack? It's in a field. I'm assuming it's in a field. It's that little first area. That's what I think. I don't know. That's the way I'm picturing it. Okay. Maybe in a sack. Okay. All right. It's a good place to stop. And we'll pick up with Toshma in 2 weeks, I think. Let me just check the diary. But hopefully that should be fine.